Oh, everything's connected from last night. Reconnected it correctly. What gets your focus? What gets your focus? I've got a PowerPoint that I'd like us to have a look at. And what I'm trying to do is take your eyes on a journey, okay? Photographers, artists, hopefully presenters as well, can give you something, and what happens is as you're looking at it, your eyes don't just go on to one point, they actually travel as the presenter, photographer, artist actually want you to do. Now, what I'd like you to do is have a look at some photos. I'll tell Stephen to put them up at the appropriate time. What I want you to do is look at it. Hopefully it'll come out. It's not going to be exactly the same, obviously, because it's on a big screen rather than one right in front of you, but hopefully we'll get the effect. What I want you to do is have a look and think about what your eyes are doing, what you're looking at, and what's getting your focus, what's getting your attention, where are they going, okay? You get the idea. Okay, Stephen. The first one's a blank, but the second one is a photo, and it'll come up with number one, and hopefully just have a look and see what happens. Okay. What happened to your eyes? What did you look at? The rose, the flower, the one at the back, got your attention, yeah? That was what grabbed you first of all, but what happened after that? What did your eyes do? Then they sort of swung across to your right, yeah, and you notice that there are other things, the blurry, you can still see them, you can't see the detail, obviously it's the front of the building here, yeah? So your eye sort of went for the centre, the rose is in the centre of the photo, yeah? Generally when you look at a photo, you'll go to the centre and then you become aware of other things around it. Okay? Right, could you put the second one up please, Stephen? Okay, what happened there? Then you went to the flower. So you went basically the other way around, yeah? And as you look at that, the carpet was sort of up the middle of the photo. Did you find that your eyes sort of started at the bottom and went up? Yeah? It worked. All right, that's what's called composition. And the idea is that whoever sets it up, what they're trying to do is to take your eyes on a certain journey. Yeah? So that there's an interest. You can see the difference sometimes between a good photo and an ordinary photo by the fact that with an ordinary photo, there's lots of things there. There's nothing that sort of grabs you. You just see lots of individual elements. If something's being set up, and some photographers can take thousands and thousands of photos and select one, because that's the one that does it. What got your focus? You're initially looking at the centre, that grabs your attention. And then you become aware of things on the side. I mean, as you're looking at that, you can see that there's a clock, this clock, obviously, towards your top right. You can see it's a clock, you can't really see any detail, unless you've got really good eyesight, in which case you can look at it and say the time was whatever. Okay? You become aware of edge things. There's a focal point. In the first photo, the rose was in crisp focus, yeah? And that helps to grab your attention. If you look at this photo, there's nothing that's really in pin-sharp focus. But there's things that are closer to a pin-sharp focus than other things. The flowers are in really blurry vision. Some things are in the foreground, some things are in the background. And if you think of relating distance to time, the things that are really close up are now, and the things that are further away are further down the line. If you know God, the now, the close up things, are part of a bigger picture. If you don't know God, now is all you have, and you don't really know what's beyond that. The rose, what's smack in front of your face, is all that you're focusing on. You don't get to see the bigger picture. In that first picture, what you had was the rose bang centre, and then there were other things around it, but they were obscured. You're vaguely aware of something else. And so often, if people don't know God, that's how it can be. They're vaguely aware that there's other things, but they can't really put the finger on it. Maybe have ideas about what's there, but it's definitely not got their focus. In Luke 12, 16 to 21, Jesus told a parable and said this: "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns, build bigger ones. Then I will store my surplus grain. I said to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God." Now, in telling the parable, which you know very well, Jesus didn't say that this rich man was a crook. He didn't say that he got his money by dishonest ways, you know, shady dealings or whatever. For all we know, he could have worked really hard at it. We're not told that he'd treated people badly, that he looked and saw people who were hard up and thought, "Well, you can't have any of my money, it's mine." We're not told any of those things. So what had he done wrong? Well, this isn't a parable about the dangers of being rich and successful. It's a parable about the danger of having the wrong kind of heart, the wrong kind of focus. Ray Pritchard gave us those words: the dangers of the wrong kind of heart. And the wrong kind of heart can apply to anything. It's not just wealth, it can be possessions, it can be reputation. Some people say, you know, "I look after my reputation, I treasure my reputation." You notice Jesus didn't. He had a really rough ride as far as reputations were concerned. The Pharisee says, "Well, look at him. You know, he drinks wine. He associates with all these different people. What sort of person is he?" The wrong kind of heart can also apply to people. We're not saying that people are unimportant, but whereabouts in the picture are they? What has got the central focus? We need to hold things of this life very lightly, because we can't hold on to them. Like that photo there, we've got to aim past the very close things, the now, and have a look what the bigger picture is, what's beyond that, what is the also. Not just have everything further on obscured by the present reality, but say the present reality is only part of the picture. Psalm 40 verse 4 in the Message version says this: "Blessed are you who give yourself over to God. Turn your backs on the world's sure thing and ignore what the world worships." You will be bombarded with ideas, sold lifestyles, giving you the idea of what is important, but we've got to see beyond that. There are thousands of alternatives, but there's only one true thing that matters. Don't buy the lie. At times, we have to refocus. In Colossians 2, 22 through to chapter 3, verse 4, it says this. Since you died with Christ to the elemental spiritual forces of this world, why, as though you still belong to the world, do you submit to its rules? Don't handle, don't taste, don't touch. These rules will have to do with things that are destined to perish with use. They are based on merely human commands and teachings. Such regulations indeed have an appearance of wisdom with their self-imposed worship, their false humility, and their harsh treatment of the body, but they lack any value in restraining sensual indulgence. Since then you've been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on earthly things, for you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory. Paul says there that these things are destined to perish with use. Have you had something that was brand new? You looked at it, it was brilliant. Piece of clothing, something else. Wear it again and again and again, and what happens? It wears out. It perishes with use. When I first got my motorbike, the paintwork was glistening, it was shiny, looked good. But over time, the paintwork dulls. Occasionally you find that chimney bricks drop onto it and sort of put dents in it. Okay? But life happens, doesn't it? And things wear out. The greatest thing will wear out. Unless, of course, we preserve it and never use it. But then, what's the point in having it? You know, it's like the art collector who has this fantastic art piece and he locks it away so that the air can't get to it, so the light doesn't cause it to deteriorate, that nobody ever looks at it. These things that we have are destined to perish with use. So Paul says, set your hearts on things above. Set your hearts. The Greek word there is zeteo. And it means to seek out in order to find a thing by whatever means at our disposal. In other words, it's a goal, it's a purpose, it's a desire, it's a priority, it's a focus. Some have driving passions. You know from perhaps early years that they have set their lives on a particular course. Something's grabbed them and they're going for it. You know, there's a friend whose son is business-minded. Richard said, it's all he ever talks about. You know, he's talking about business, making his own business. He's running one business and he started another. Because all he's interested in is business. It's not actually the money behind it. It's just the buzz of running the business. That's what's driving him. I know people, again, in similar sort of situations where they enjoy so much the thrill of running the business. Other people look on and think, what? But they get such a joy. That's their focus. That's their priority. That's their goal. That's their aim. And we all have goals, aims and purposes, even if it's just to have a quiet life. Do you know what your goal, your purpose, your aim is? Well, let me ask you this question. What do you willingly give your time to? Because that is what your goal or your purpose, your aim is. What do you focus on? In Matthew 6:19-21, Jesus said this, do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and vermin destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasure in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there is your heart. As we sing in the children's song, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. What do we value? What do we count as being of great cost, of great worth. Where's your heart? In Mark 12:30, Jesus said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart." In Matthew 16:21-23, he said this. Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests and teachers of the law, that he must be killed on the third day and then raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said, "this shall never happen to you." Jesus turned to Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." You do not have in mind, you're not seeking the right things, you're not treasuring the right things. Your focus is on the rose, not on things to come. The wrong mindset, the wrong thought pattern. You're not looking at the bigger picture. You can get lenses that you put on cameras that you can get so close to something. It's incredible. You can zoom in and get incredible detail, but you don't see what's around. At times like that, we need to zoom out of the now and look to what is to come. Romans 12:3 says, "For by the grace given to me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith that God has distributed to each of you." Paul's saying, see the big picture, see the full picture and how we fit in. Get things in perspective. There's times at work where the way things happen is more or less a project is given to a technician, and basically they get to sort it out. They can do anything they want, they can organise the situation, they can do it. It's their project. The little bits, the detail, it's down to them. There are other times when we work on larger projects where it's more of a collaboration, when we're working with other people. At times like that, you can't do exactly what you want to do. And we've had situations where I've said to somebody, you know, can you do this, and told them how to do it. But because they're so used to working on their own, they think, ah, well, there's a better way of doing this. We'll do it this way instead. Then they come back and it doesn't fit to the other part, because they didn't have the bigger picture. God works with each one of us to orchestrate us correctly. It's no good in an orchestra having the lead violin going off in one direction while you've got the cello doing something else, the brass section deciding that they don't want to play this, and the drums doing whatever they want. They look to the conductor. They know what they need to play, but they look to the conductor to actually make sure that everybody fits in the right way at the right time. You know, sometimes you look at an orchestra and think, well, the guy at the front waving the stick is just a waste of time. There's no point in being there. What's he doing? The ones who sat round him are doing all the work, but he's the one who's keeping it together. Our orchestrator is the Holy Spirit. We focus on him because he really has got the bigger picture. And our part needs to fit in with everybody else's. We need to have an idea of where things are going. We need to have an overriding concern. The bigger picture must not be pushed aside. Vincent's Word Studies looks at Colossians 3-2 and says this. Paul makes two statements. First of all, set your heart. But then he says, set your mind. Our affections and our thought need to be on the same thing. Our deep desires need to be locked in to God's. It's the whole person. It's not just part of it. The whole thing. And Vincent's Word Study says this. Set your heart marks the practical striving to obtain something. Set your mind is the inward impulse and disposition towards something. What are we drawn to? Both need to be directed to the same place, to heaven. Bishop J.B. Lightfoot said this, "You must not only seek heaven, you must think heaven." What we have now is a part. What we see now is just a little fraction of the whole. We are given revelation to tell us there's more than this. Our focus needs to be where God is aiming it. We need to be travelling on the journey that He's setting out, not locked in on one small particular bit that is our now. We need to follow His direction as He leads us through the photograph of life, if you like. Some of the cameras that you can get these days, they have incredible zoom lenses. You can zoom right in and have everything in crisp focus. But you also need to be able to zoom out to get the bigger picture, to see how everything fits together. And heaven needs to be our main thing. Jesus said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength." Our whole being, the whole job lot. And the question is, what's your focus?